I'm John Kroll. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about the impasse in the Indiana House of Representatives. Ever since most of the Democrats walked out more than 10 days ago, this legislative session has been at a standstill. Speaker of the House Brian Bosma, a Republican, met with Minority Leader Pat Bauer, a Democrat, yesterday, raising speculation that the impasse might be resolved soon. In an exclusive interview this morning, Bosma, though, suggested that the conflict between the caucuses might be escalating.
I'd say my conversation with Representative Bauer this morning, indicating that he's not returning this week, leaves us little choice but to begin finding absent members.
We'll talk about the duel in the State House with leaders from both parties and, of course, you. Please join this contentious conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending comments or questions at WFYI. Please do make your voice part of this important discussion. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're here to talk about the impasse in the Indiana House of Representatives. And our guests today are Indiana Democratic Party consultant Jennifer Wagner. Jennifer, good to have you with us.
Thanks for inviting me.
Pete Seat, Indiana Republican Party Communications Director. Pete, good to have you with us.
Thank you, John.
Nancy Guyot, who is with the AFL-CIO. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And Representative Charlie Brown, a Democrat. Representative Brown, good to have you on the program.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We're going to start, if I seem to be talking briskly, we've got a lot to get done in this hour, and we're going to get to it pretty quickly. We had an interview also with House Speaker Brian Bosma a little bit earlier today, and we're going to play that for you right now. Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma.
I did speak with Representative Pat Bauer this morning after our discussions yesterday to see if the Democrats who are in Urbana intended to return, and he assured me they were not returning today on Thursday. And I asked him if they would be here on Friday, and he said no, they wouldn't be here Friday either. So we have to start examining all of our options and see which direction we go with this thing. That's 2 full weeks that the Democrats have been in checked into a hotel in Urbana, Illinois.
At what point does it become appropriate to start talking about whether this session is salvageable? At what point do you have to start talking realistically about pulling the plug?
Well, I'd say we're getting pretty darn close. This is really an unprecedented move when minority group of legislators have left the state and say they're not coming back. It's cost the taxpayers about $250,000 so far just in expenses, not including the hotel bills that are being paid by the Democrat Party. So this has been an expensive exercise by the Democrats and truly unprecedented. So we will have to pick the pieces up. The governor has said if we can't, we'll be here in special session until New Year's, and I support him wholeheartedly in that effort. It's time for these guys to get back and get to their job.
Is there any common ground? Are you guys getting closer? I mean, in some ways, it almost sounds as if the situation's escalating now.
Well, we've made a number of concessions. Of course, we declared the ostensible reason for all of this, the original right to work bill that this all started with. We declared that to be a dead issue for the rest of the session. That was met immediately with 10 more bills on a list in which the demand was made that they come off the table for the rest of the session or the Democrats weren't returning. We're not going to concede to that demand. And now they've said they didn't make that demand. I'll just read it to you, John. It was in a release that came to us. It says, "We will remain here until we get assurances from the governor and House Speaker Brian Bosma that these bills," list of 11 follows, "that these bills will not be called down in the House at any time this session." We made it clear that that's not going to be the case. In fact, one of those bills, the Unemployment Compensation Fund Recovery Bill, has already been signed into law. We have had some discussions about reasonable changes to a few of the other bills, including one that deals with public construction and the wages for that construction. A few of the other issues, including our school choice scholarship bill, but we're not going to either negotiate a calendar or negotiate with folks that are in Illinois on the exact content of bills that the vast majority of Hoosiers and the vast majority of the members of the House support. The Democrats have never been vehemently in opposition to our plans for the last decade, our attempts for the last decade to especially expand charter schools in Indiana, to allow families, especially inner-city families that don't have the means otherwise, to get a portion of the funds going to their traditional public school and take it to a school of choice. They've always opposed these adamantly. I think with the tables turned politically, this is the way that they, the only way they see to continue to attempt to govern. But honestly, John, it totally disregards the democratic social compact that we all participate in, where elections occur every 2 years for the General Assembly and for Congress around the country. And we live by the results. And aside from the exercise of the minority on both from both parties for a couple of days to try to negotiate some things, this has really been unprecedented. The closest thing we've seen to this was the 6-day walkout by the same group of Democrats in 2005, the last time that Republicans controlled the House, that ended up killing 132 Senate bills at the end of the session. So it's a replay of that. Cheryl and I raised a couple of teenagers, and I get a tantrum when I see one, and a closed bedroom door saying I'm not coming out until I get my way. And we didn't let that govern our actions as we raised our kids, and it's not going to govern the actions here in the Indiana House.
Is it too early for us to start talking about, you know, what happens if this session gets blown up, and as the governor says, we have special sessions until New Year's Day? At what point, without a budget, though, do people in Indiana start feeling the pinch on this? I mean, I remember talking with Luke Kinley a couple of years ago when the budget negotiations were difficult, and he at that point was exploring what he called the nuclear option, which is, you know, what happens if we can't arrive at a budget by July 1?
That hasn't happened since 1863, and Governor Oliver P. Morton declared emergency powers and ran the state on them. And actually, we did some research on that when back in 1991 or 93, that was the last time this happened, when things went quite a while, a couple special sessions until June 27th. We're a long way away from that right now. Our state budget goes through July 1. I can tell you with the vehement contact we're getting to my office to take very harsh action against the Democrat minority absenting itself, I just can't imagine that this can last too terribly much longer. People aren't going to be able to walk down Main Street in their home communities because people are upset about this going on so long from such a small minority.
Do you anticipate then? I mean, have there been any indications in your conversations with Minority Leader Bauer or other Democrats that they're coming back, say, in the next week?
I didn't get any indication to that effect from Representative Bauer. We have only two tools remaining. I've already suspended their expense reimbursements for any member that's not present here in the building. We have two tools left. The first is an order of censure, which is fairly innocuous, but it does forever record in our state's archives that a censure has been issued against specific members. And we do have the power to fine members as well, and that has been very rarely used, and it is under serious consideration. In fact, I'd say my conversation with Representative Bauer this morning, indicating that he's not returning this week, leaves us little choice but to begin fining absent members. Either one of those options are not ones I prefer. They're not, particularly when we've had such a bipartisan extension here by the majority this session. And despite what you hear from the Democrats' rhetoric right now, I broke 194 years of state history and tradition and appointed two Democrat committee chairmen. We have had bills proceed here that have only Democrat minority party authors on them. That's never happened. And everyone's been given an opportunity to speak, be treated with respect and integrity here. And that will continue, but I can tell you that it's not been met with the response that we'd hoped.
To impose either the censures or the fines in this case, do you need a quorum to do that? I mean, does the entire House have to vote on that?
No, it does not. Eight or more members under our rules, and in fact our Constitution, have the ability to compel members to attend through the fine and censure proceedings. So that's the only tool we have left. Theoretically, the governor has the right to send the state police out to round people up if they're in the state. That's one of the reasons the Democrats have holed up over in Urbana. But he's indicated, apparently in Wisconsin, they've practically shut down state police operations between protecting the state house from 70,000 demonstrators and searching for missing legislators. So it's my hope that we can get six reasonable Democrats, in addition to Steve Stemler, the one reasonable Democrat that's remained here the whole time, in their seats early next week, and get the show back on the road here. If we can get them back here next week, it'll be difficult, but we can get our work done on time and turn our attention to some of the critical matters that that face the state and get this charade really over with.
So, as I understand it, then you don't need a quorum to impose the fines or the censures. The procedure would be how?
It would be through motion adopted by those members present, and we don't need a quorum to do that. And that's breaking news, because I've only said we might do it a couple of other places. We really have no choice, but to take this next step. And I will inform all the members of it so that they're aware. That we'll be imposing probably starting next Monday. We'll have to talk about whether or not we go retroactively to those who are missing Monday for this week. We're likely to have a Rules Committee meeting today. The deadline for bill passage, we extended to tomorrow. I think that's why the minority leader is again staying out, trying to crash and burn the entire legislative session. We're going to extend it again. It will be the identical calendar when they return. We'll extend it through next Wednesday, Thursday and Friday, the Big Ten tournament's in town, and most of the legislators that are staying in from out of town are getting kicked out of their rooms, so we've got to complete our work by Wednesday of next week, or go home and wait another week. And I can tell you it's getting pretty frustrating for those 61 members that are sitting in their seats, ready to debate issues, ready to move forward on amendments, we've indicated we're not entering into some backroom deal on this. That's what the Democrats want. We'll resolve it through civil discussions and amendments on the floor of the House.
Have you, it sounds like you tossed out the hope there of finding, as you framed it, six reasonable Democrats. Have you had contact with members of that caucus other than the minority leader? Do you get a sense that they're, you know, that the resolve is not monolithic?
Well, I've only had a couple of calls, and I haven't called people myself. They've called me, and I told someone I wasn't dialing for Democrats. I'm sure there are a lot of conversations going on. There are a lot of friendships across the aisle, Republican and Democrat, and I'm sure members of our caucus are chatting with lots of folks. And I know the heat's on those who are not here, because the heat's on us to treat them harshly. So I know it has to be difficult for them as well, but we need them back here so we can get on with the business of the state.
That was House Speaker Brian Bosma, Republican leader, talking about what is the news of the morning, and that is that he is going to impose censures and fines on Democrats who are in the state of Illinois. Representative Charlie Brown,
yes.
I'd like to ask you, we're going to push the break back just a little bit here so that you have a chance to respond immediately here. Do you think that is going to alter Democrats' resolve or have any effect on this situation at all?
I would suspect that it would have the opposite effect. I don't know what fines Speaker Bosma can levy, we have already voluntarily said we would not accept the per diem, daily per diem. We have already received our salary. I don't know what other fines can be levied against us, so except through the per diem that we have already said we would not accept or receive through the time that we are away from the state house.
And it seemed also in that interview, and I may be extrapolating here, you can correct, but it seemed like what he was trying to do is see if he could pull together a group of say, six Democrats who would be willing to work with his caucus, which is why I asked the question, is the resolve in that caucus across the board to hang in there, or does there seem to be some weakening?
To this day, it has been a resolve of the 35 or 36 that have been present there that we would follow the lead of the Democratic leader, Bauer. He has not at this point indicated any change. I thought yesterday we would at least take those few steps forward when Bauer came to Indianapolis to meet with the speaker. And I thought that there were steps taken. I don't understand this thing he said about backroom deals. No one has said anything about backroom deals because the meeting on yesterday was open to the media. And Leader Bauer indicated the things that would have to be some compromise on. He indicated the bills. Speaker Bosma indicated he's talking about 11 bills. That's not true. It is now down to 5 bills in which we said there would have to be some changes or some compromises before we would come back to the floor. And mainly, I mean, it would be disheartening to even talk about coming back with all of those labor members and teachers there on a daily basis, making the sacrifices that they have made if we were to come back now without some understanding about those 5 bills that Leader Bauer listed and spoke to yesterday in Mr. Bosman's office.
We are talking about the impasse in Indiana state government right now. I would like to invite our listeners to join this conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881 or sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking about the impasse in the Indiana House of Representatives. Our guests are Indiana Democratic Party spokesperson Jennifer Wagner, Indiana Republican Party Communications Director Pete Seat, and Nancy Gaeta, the AFL-CIO. We also have Representative Charlie Brown, a Democrat, on the phone, and we just listened to Brian Bosma. I'm going to throw this to our panel real quickly, and I think, Nancy Gaeta, you've been having, your organization has been demonstrating at the State House pretty much nonstop for 2 weeks now. What brought you out? I think we've got two overarching questions to ask here, and I'm going to frame it so everybody knows where the discussion is going. One is, what brought us to this point, and then what lies ahead? So all of these are going to be variations on that theme. What brought you to the State House? What did you find objectionable about the bills?
There's a whole host of bills which, taken together, constitute an anti-worker agenda, an agenda that we think endangers the ability of workers to be members of the middle class, people who can really support their communities and can help Indiana prosper. And it's those bills in their collective force that is of concern to us.
Which bills are those?
There's a number of them. There are bills that impact the ability of people to collectively bargain. There are bills that impact the ability of people to freely associate in organizations. There are bills such as the Right to Work Bill that impact the ability of them folks to democratically control their organizations. There are bills that directly go after wage rates in communities, and altogether, it's a pretty devastating agenda.
Pete Seat, what is the make the argument on the other side here? Why are these bills necessary changes in
the
party's view?
Sure, John. I would take a step back first and go back to the fall of 2010 when the governor and Republicans running for the legislature presented a bold agenda to Hoosier voters and said, this is what we want to do. We want an honestly balanced budget. We want to improve our education system. We want an automatic taxpayer refund when the surplus reaches a certain point. We want to reduce the corporate tax rate to encourage innovation and growth and to bring businesses to the state of Indiana. And Hoosier voters overwhelmingly approved that. They supported that agenda. They gave Republicans a majority in the House of Representatives. 60 out of the 100 seats are held by Republicans. And now you fast forward to the current legislative session, and Democrats have decided that they would rather than be part of Indiana's comeback, they would rather railroad the Democratic process. They refuse to balance our state's budget. They refuse to improve our education system. And unfortunately, that's really not news. So that's, from my standpoint, that's what this really boils down to.
Jennifer Wagner, I'm going to give you a chance to weigh in, too.
Thanks, John. I'm actually really glad Pete brought up going back, because going back to last year's election, I think that's a lovely laundry list of talking points you listed off there. But the number one reason people voted was jobs. And ironically, the GOP has no jobs plan on the table. All they have is, you know, job-killing agenda items. And I think the biggest problem we have right now is that it's actually Speaker Bosma's problem. I feel kind of bad for him. He has some members of his caucus who came straight out of the gate, you know, just got into office, probably 19 or 20 of them, and they have overreached. They went after right to work. They went after some of these bills that Nancy just listed off. And instead of engendering a spirit of compromise, now we've got gridlock. And Democrats are ready to compromise. Democrats are ready to talk. But, you know, Speaker Bosma needs to get his caucus under control.
Representative Charlie Brown, can you talk a little bit about what brought you to and your caucus to the decision to walk out? I know Representative Ed Delaney said that the right to work bill, when it got reported out of committee, was the straw that broke the camel's back. Were there other steps leading up to that?
Well, as has been stated, we came with an agenda to create jobs. I don't think there has been a single piece of Republican legislation that speaks to job creation, that which the governor campaigned on, and the Republican Party itself said that we need to create jobs in Indiana. And they front-loaded their legislative agenda with social issues, talking about marriage and abortions. And it's just beyond the pale how we get bogged down with social issues when, on the other hand, folks are saying, I need a job. The economy needs to be improved. And that has not been spoken to at all. And then the fact that the governor and keeps calling names. I mean, throwing half-truths out there to the listening public, running ads that are just not true, saying we're in Urbana swimming and sitting in a hot tub. Farthest thing from the truth. How then do you, with those kind of hand grenades being thrown, it's going to be very difficult to get to a civil table and say, let's look at the issues that keeping us apart.
Do you think, Representative Brown, that this session is salvageable at this point?
Very much so. It's just a matter of civility and calm folks sitting down at a table and saying, here's where we have to get to. Mr. Bosma keeps talking about backroom deals. It would not be a backroom deal if they closed the door, the two leaders, and say, how far can we come to agreement on these issues? That is commonly done throughout the legislative process. I don't know why he wants to turn it into a negative vein by saying, oh, they want to do things in secret and backroom deals. Far from the truth once more, that we just want to say, here are the things that we want, here are the things that you want to pass. How do we come to agreement in the middle?
What would you need? What would Democrats in the House need to hear in order to come back?
that we will reconsider and amend the five, I think there are five bills that are kind of contentious at this point. And to their credit, they have agreed that they will amend the voucher bill some more. All the others are directed at the working class, labor. And why are they after labor? Is it a coincidence? Is it a coincidence that not one national media other than MSNBC, I think, has said anything about four or five states that all have Republican governors that are after this same issue of breaking the union? And there may be others that are waiting in the wing. But, you know, it can't be that kind of coincidence that this has occurred at this time.
We wanted to create a kind of forum here where these issues could be discussed. And Pete Seed, I am going to give you an opportunity to respond. Is that the agenda? Is breaking labor, breaking unions part of what's going on here?
Well, let me respond to two things first. One thing that my Democratic counterpart said about not having a job creation agenda. We have two very different worldviews. Democrats are convinced that the only way you create jobs in this country is through government spending more taxpayer money. And that is proven false. We saw that on a national scale with the stimulus bill that President Obama got through the Congress. We were told unemployment would not go above 8% and that 3.5 million jobs would be created. Well, guess what? And none of that turned out to be the case. So, you know, reducing the corporate tax rate helps job creation. This is all about helping job creators bring jobs to this state. I have, you know, multiple examples I can use across the state of companies that have come here, relocated, or entrepreneurs that have started a business because they know that we have such a strong and attractive business climate in this state. To Representative Brown, his point on not, you know, swimming in the hot tubs over there, I think on behalf of Hoosier taxpayers, I would ask, then exactly what is it that you're doing in Urbana? Your job is in Indianapolis and not in Urbana, Illinois. So if you're not swimming in the hot tub, what are you doing? Because it's not your job. And to the third point, sorry to go long here, but the third point, again, this is larger than just, I know, it's attractive to make this unions versus everyone, and that's not the debate that's being played out right now. Democrats said, we were told that this was about the right to work bill that was taken off the table almost immediately, yet they remain in Urbana. So that was used, I think, more as a bait and switch than really the crux of the argument that we're having.
Well, and I Representative Brown, please.
Yeah. No one ever said it was about the right to work bill. I think Nancy has stated that throughout the four or five other labor bills, it's all about right to work. So it wasn't about a single bill. What are we doing in Urbana? We are using the only tool that we feel we have. That is to prevent a quorum for these bills to be voted on. If we came back on the floor, you can bet your bottom dollar that all five of those bills would pass. We could have the debate, the discussion, pro and con, but the point is that we are saying we don't want those pieces of legislation to be signed into law. And what other tool do we have but to be out of state so the governor cannot reach us through the state police mechanism to bring us back here forcibly?
David, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Certainly. Glad to do it.
Yes. I just have a quick comment first, and that is that I am very much in support of what the Democrat caucus is doing right now. But my question is, I think that the general public hasn't heard enough specifics about what these five pieces of legislation really are. I know that what I've heard just from today, one that particularly stands out to me, and I guess perhaps the focus of my question right now is the business of allocating public money to private schools. On the surface of it, certainly doesn't seem to make much sense to me. The whole point of having a public school system is to be able to provide access to education to all people. And to then say, well, we're going to take money out of that, we're going to take money away from people who don't have other means, and we're going to give it to private schools, where presumably, if it's a private school, it's private for a reason, that there are other funds available that have helped create and sustain those schools. So I would like to know more about that in particular, but I think in general, the public deserves to know more about what all this contention is about the specific bill.
Thank you for that question, David. We'll take it up.
Thank you.
Nancy Guyatt, I think we also need to ask, why is that bill in particular a priority for you and your coalition?
Well, Labor has always supported a strong public school system. We think that that's important both to our ability to be competitive in the future and also to our ability to have a society in which we all understand one another, in which we all appreciate one another. Public schools are the original place where we're taught to be citizens. In addition, it's clear that most people of working means send their children to public schools, and that will always be the case. The bill that the caller asked about essentially takes public funds, taxpayer dollars, and allows those funds to be utilized to support private institutions of learning, religious, private, for-profit, etc., without a great deal of limitation, that takes money out of our already pained public schools, the public schools that have already sustained substantial cuts in their budgets, and it does so without guaranteeing any better learning opportunities, and I think at a real cost to our ability to raise up good citizens.
We are going to be talking about this issue of vouchers at greater length here in a few weeks when we have State Superintendent of Public Instruction Tony Bennett and Nate Schnellenberger, the leader of the Indiana State Teachers Association, back on the program for round three of their debate. Pete Seat, make the argument for vouchers, basically, in response to her. Why is this a priority right now for the party?
Sure. You know, I'm not a parent, so I can't speak to this personally, but I know my parents feel this way, and other parents that I know do. They want the best for their children, as they should. And as Nancy said, you know, we live in a competitive global economy, and we want to ensure that Hoosier students have every tool necessary and every skill available to them to compete in that economy. So if a school is failing the students and not meeting measurable standards and ensuring achievement, parents are going to look at the system, assess what's happening, and if they have the means, move their child from a public school to a private school to a parochial school, what have you, or perhaps homeschool them. This voucher bill, as it stands now, is geared towards lower income and the lower end of the middle income scale to ensure that those families are not trapped in a public school system that is not serving their needs correctly. So they have the ability to transfer to another school if that's what they want to ensure their child can succeed.
We are talking about the impasse at the Indiana House of Representatives. Our guests are Nancy Guyatt, Pete Seat, Jennifer Wagner, and Representative Charlie Brown. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. My guest today, as we talk about the impasse in the Indiana House of Representatives, Jennifer Wagner is a consultant with the Indiana Democratic Party, Indiana Republican Party Communications Director Pete Seat, Indiana AFL-CIO President Nancy Guyatt, and Democratic State Representative Charlie Brown. We were talking really about the voucher bill, but I think I'd like to take this in a slightly different direction. I think an email we've gotten from a listener, Aaron Calvert, sets this up a bit when she says, hi, I don't think anyone is right here. No one is listening to their constituents, and they all ought to, and will be fired in the next election. If the job doesn't get done, them should not be paid not to give their salaries back to the state. If I left my job for 2 weeks, I would get fired, and they should too. Indianapolis doesn't like people who are incompetent or corrupt. We don't care about your silly party issues. Work it out. Starts out a little bit there by a pox on both your houses, and then veers hard toward the Democrats. But I guess what I would say, based on something Representative Brown said earlier about the mailings and sort of the campaign of persuasion that's going on right now, how much are Jennifer Wagner and Pete Seed, I'm going to involve you primarily, how much are the two parties raising, fundraising, around this struggle right now? Speaker Bosma said that he was getting tons of calls and all of that. Pete Seed, are you guys raising money?
Well, I know the Democrats have done a lot of, or at least attempted to do a lot of fundraising.
Don't worry, I'm going to ask Jennifer the same question.
Pete doesn't have to talk about where the money's coming from.
Well, no, but I mean, it's a question that Jennifer, I think, should have to answer.
She will.
Far as where the money is coming from to pay for the hotel bills, what special interests are helping to fund this the party in Urbana right now for the past 2 weeks. There have been some Republicans that have made financial contributions because they want to ensure come 2012 that we have the necessary resources to defeat some of these Democrats that have thwarted the Democratic process.
How much money are we talking about, Pete?
No, I don't know. I'm not the finance director, so I have no idea.
Well, Pete, you didn't answer the other day. How big is your radio buy that the governor's PAC is funding?
Well, two parts to that. Number one, that's done by the governor's PAC, and I don't speak for the governor's PAC. And number two, very simple answer. If you take the time to go to www.aiminghigherpac.com, since 2003, all the contributions and expenditures have been there.
So, I think you're talking about aiminghigher.net, actually.
No, if you go to the website, it's all there.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not that hard.
Well, I'd rather cut through this. I have to ask, Jennifer, I'm asking you the same question. How much money are the Democrats raising?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't have the latest figure, but I can tell you that almost all of our donations have been small-dollar donations. I think the last time I checked, we had 150 or so folks who had just given, you know, low-dollar amounts. You know, we're not the Republican Party. We can't just hit up folks for 10 grand a pop. I would also add that within... we sent out a blast email, I think it was last week, to folks asking them to just to sign up to send a message to Speaker Bosma, Senate Pro Tem Long, and Governor Daniels. And within about 3 hours, we had 2,000 folks sign up to send that message. So I think, you know, I checked the inbox for the party, and a lot of the support we're getting has just been overwhelmingly positive. You know, I think Pete and those guys just really try to put out this message that that our folks aren't doing their job. They are doing their job. They're representing the people of Indiana who sent them to the State House to represent their best interests. And, you know, I understand and appreciate the folks who say that, you know, I'd be fired if I didn't show up for my job. Well, your job is not representing the people of Indiana at the State House in important policy decisions like the ones that are on the table right now. These 100 folks, that's what they get paid to do. And that's what our folks are doing, standing united for middle-class families in Indiana. And to do that, yes, they had to leave the state. And that's the only way we can be heard. And by gosh, we are being heard right now.
Dan, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Certainly. What I would ask in response is that you get your question quickly, because we are running out of time.
Okay, two questions, two comments. Number one, who pays the hotel bill? Number two, are you guys still being compensated for not doing your job? And I will preface that statement also with the fact that I am an independent, neither Democrat nor Republican. 2 weeks at $100 a night is about $1,400 per rep. And as I understand it, that means if you guys don't get your way, you're just not going to do your job at all. So I would take the answers off the air. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Jennifer Wagner, I'll throw that to you.
Sure. The Indiana Democratic Party is paying for the hotel rooms. And it's important to note that during the long legislative session, as a result of legislation signed into action by Governor Daniels, legislators are not allowed to raise money. So the caucuses can't raise money for this right now. So the party is footing the bill for our lawmakers to stand united for middle-class Hoosiers while they're in Illinois. And to answer the latter part of the question, you know, look, they are doing their job. That's what people need to understand. This is all part of the process. And I want to add something to respond to Speaker Bosma's initial statement. This is not unprecedented. You know, when he was in the minority, his caucus walked out in 2001 over something that doesn't really have anything to do with regular folks, the legislative maps. And in 2004, when they walked out, he killed 80 bills. So enough of the grandstanding. I have a feeling, you know, call me crazy, I've been around the legislature for 10 years now. This is all going to get resolved. You know, Speaker Bosman's going to get his folks back in line, Democrats are going to come back, and everybody's going to get to the point that most people are missing in this debate. The point here is to do what's best for Hoosiers and to create jobs, which is something Republicans haven't been so pretty good at the last 7 years. So Democrats are doing the right thing, Republicans are going to compromise, and it'll all work out in the end.
Jennifer Wagner, I would like to ask a question, though, that Pete Seat alluded to earlier, and that is the hotel bills and also the caller did, too, the Indiana Democratic. Where is the money coming from for the Indiana Democratic Party to pay the hotel bills?
From the party. I mean, it's coming from the party.
But where are you raising it from?
From the people I alluded to earlier who are giving us contributions online, small-dollar contributions from real people in Indiana who support what we're doing.
Okay. Representative Charlie Brown, do you see any common ground here, any place, if you were brokering this right now, where would you try to start a discussion to get people back together?
I would start with Speaker Bosma. Why don't you go back to the format that you started with on day one through 20-something and just say, we are here in session, we are attempting to be here in session. I mean, the tone is being set that it's going to push persons farther apart. Then invite Leader Bauer to come to your office, the two of you close the door and cut through the minutiae, and then bring in the other appropriate folk to determine what can be done to resolve this. The Republicans are absolutely right. We are in the minority. We cannot govern from the minority, but our voices have to be heard. And that's the contention right now. Our voices are not being heard. We represent a portion of the 6 million folk in Indiana, and they are not being heard, and we are here to protect their rights and their ability to continue a living wage.
And let me ask a question, because one of the things that was alluded to in the interview with Speaker Bosma was the possibility that people other than the Speaker and the minority leader might be able to talk some of this out. I mean, is the solution or whatever the peace settlement might be going to have to come from the top down, or could it come from lower, on the lower end of either caucus?
Well, ultimately, the governor is going to have to get involved, and he, with the four lead caucus leaders, sit down and say, we've been here long enough. Let's get this thing resolved. And I think that's where the starting point is going to have to be. I think right now, Speaker Bosma has dug in his heels with every day announcing from the mic, any negotiations will occur on this floor. That won't be negotiations, because if six or more Democrats show up, he will say, here's House Bill so-and-so. Is there a motion to pass this bill? There is already a second, and that bill passes with limited debate or any dialogue at all. That is why the Democrats are using the only tool that we feel are available to us, and that's to not allow a quorum on that floor so that these bills can be voted on. So now, Governor Daniels, call those four folk into your office and say, let's get past this point.
I probably should note here that we issued an invitation to Governor Daniels to appear on this program or to send someone, and he chose not to send someone.
I mean, Governor Daniels is on record as saying, hey, these social issues should not be on the table. And that's what started this downward spiral with the social issues getting out in front of job creation or traditional education, whatever.
Let me ask real quickly here. Nancy Guyot, in some ways this thing started with labor. I mean, you guys were the obviously there was a lot of kindling down on the ground, but you guys were the spark to some degree with the demonstrations, I would guess. What constitutes a good day at work for you, and you go home and think, okay, we got out of this session what we needed? What are your priorities?
Our priorities are to, first of all, have the anti-worker, anti-middle class agenda abandoned. And secondly...
So we got clearly I think Representative Charlie Brown's got a radio going on or something back there. All right, Nancy Guyot, please.
And secondly, some of what's been talked about, the agenda that all Hoosiers have right now is the advancement of good jobs, the kind of jobs that support families. You know, it's not just labor that's been there protesting. There have been community groups, people of faith, really a wide swath of the community, and all of those folks are united around a strong middle class, supported by good jobs with good wages and benefits that help us to, as I say, keep a decent roof over your head, put food on the table, hopefully help your kids save for a college education, and have enough money left over for pizza and a movie on Friday night.
Margaret, thank you for joining the program.
Thank you.
Your question? Margaret, are you still there? It appears we may have dropped the call.
Oh, darn it.
Oh, no, you're still there, Margaret. Don't worry.
We can
still hear you. We can still hear you. It's
Thank
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for providing some comic relief.
Like a Verizon
there.
Commercial.
Okay.
You hear me now?
Yeah.
Speaker Bosma, with all due respect, first of all, I am a fourth-generation Hoosier.
Mm-hmm.
Until I became a registered Democrat, just after voting with regret for Governor Daniels in 2008, I voted for Obama and Governor Daniels,
mm-hmm.
And then felt terrifically beyond the pale betrayed by the way he handled something, and I have become a registered Democrat since then. My dad was the successful campaign manager, the Indiana campaign manager for Republican Governor Harold Hanley, and that by that time I think I was born into the fourth generation of Republicans in Indiana. We were raised to be Americans first, and then that the political parties were a practical way to work out life so that things worked. My point is...
Yeah. Margaret, could we get to do a question,
quickly,
please?
Very quickly, it's one summary.
Thank you.
To compare the job of a legislator to that of an adolescent teenager, and I had adolescent teenager, too, who'd go in and slam the door, but that is a dreadful disservice to the general public. I did not coordinate my message with Jennifer, but I'd already said it to the person who screened the call.
Okay.
I was 20 years in Washington, D.C., working in the U.S. Senate, came back to Indiana. The job of a legislator is to think, to speak of the people as if it's an homogenous group, is a disservice to the general public. Given the way that Mitch Daniels handled the behind the scenes in a disingenuous fashion, the way of the children's soldiers and sailors home, in spite of what the state legislature had voted to support, was the last straw for me.
Okay, thank you.
Indiana Republic. So, Speaker Bosma, are you in your leadership role doing behind the scenes with the current style of Republicanism to say, look at you guys?
Okay, thank you very much for the question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care. Okay, Margaret gave us quite a bit to chew on there. And I think, though, that the question I would get to, because it seems to me that this discussion and debate have revolved around two themes, and in some ways the sides are talking past each other. What I hear the Republicans talking about a lot is procedure. We won the election. It should be our agenda. Democrats saying these are policies that we find particularly objectionable, and this was the only avenue we had in which to register those objections. Should we think about whether the process needs to be fixed? I've never been, frankly, a huge fan of filibusters, but they do look a little more dignified than what's going on right now. Jennifer Wagner, your thoughts?
Well, thanks for putting me on the spot, John. You know,
That's what they pay me for.
Well, I mean, the Constitution is the Constitution here in the state of Indiana, and you know, right now this is the process. Whether it should be changed, I don't know, and I'm not really sure that folks out there, the people, if you will, to paraphrase what Margaret was saying, I don't know that they're as interested in the process as they are the outcome. I mean, we always refer to this as the sausage making part of policy making, and it's not something you want to look at, but in the end, what comes out hopefully tastes pretty decent and gets everybody fed. And I still have faith that process works here in Indiana, and I think we're seeing it work out right now.
Pete Seed, I'm going to actually let you have the last word today.
Well, that's a scary thought.
we need to change the process, do you think, or is it?
Well, I kind of agree. The process right now is the process, and you know, and people will judge based on the outcome. But I do want to make one point and to use a quote that Jennifer made earlier, which was that voters sent their representatives to the State House to do a job. And unfortunately, instead of being in the Indiana State House right now, they're in Illinois. A representative from Northwest Indiana, Mara Riordan, was found at the Illinois State House Tuesday night testifying to an education committee there. So I think, to Margaret's point, the disservice to the public that is occurring right now is legislators that refuse to do their job in the State House. And if they want to register their disapproval, wonderful. Cast a no vote. That's their prerogative and their right to do it.
And that will be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Nancy Guyatt, Pete Seat, Jennifer Wagner, Representative Charlie Brown, and, of course, House Speaker Brian Bosma, all of our callers who participated, and listeners who sent in emails and tweets. I apologize that I could not get to all of them. We will be back next week when we will be talking with Democratic candidate for Mayor Melina Kennedy. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Allseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. Board Engineers, Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. And Intern, Monica Schwab. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.